reasons that caused me to stay here. I'm stuck right now in my office. I had intended to be at my home, to where all my materials are and all of that. So, and I'm trying to settle a case. You've been through this, so you know what I'm talking about. I'll do my best, and I'll listen in on the first part. I will probably then tell you I'm leaving the circuit for a while, but I'll keep the circuit open, and then go to my home where I do have all the paperwork materials.
We'll struggle through, Brad.
And it's about a 4-minute drive from office to home.
Okay, let's go ahead and go on the record. We're on the record. This is the March 20, 1987 meeting of the Code Revision Commission. We're meeting on the fourth floor of the Park Plaza. We have present today Judge Thomas B. Stewart, Wilson Condon, Peter Froelich, Mary Hughes, Red Brown by teleconference, and John Abbott.
The chair will note that we have a quorum present for the conducting of business. Fred, the minutes of the meeting were just finished this morning, so you haven't had a chance to see them yet. They're being sent up to Fairbanks for you, however, so.
Right, I have requested that.
Yeah, so I'll defer approval of the minutes until you have an opportunity to look at that. We have a tentative agenda for today, and the first matter, of course, was the roll call approval of the minutes. And consideration of old bills for production is the next matter on the agenda. Before proceeding, I'll bring the commissioners up to date on what has transpired since we last met. I received a call last week, earlier this week, from John Dunker, who is a legislative assistant to Representative Nilo Kopanen, indicating that Representative Kopanen intended to ask his committee, House Labor and Commerce, to introduce the draft bill prepared by the commission but submitted under his name as sponsor of the draft bill on cooperative corporations. As such, I came down to Juneau a day early, yesterday the 19th, and spent quite a bit of time discussing the matter with John Dunker, and also had an opportunity to meet with Representative Kopanen. I was asked to appear at the committee meeting for the purpose of offering just informal comments, since the bill was not being considered and was not considered public testimony, on the Cooperative Corporation Code. I provided a fair amount of background information on that proposed draft bill, and answered questions from the various committee members. The consequence was that the committee moved to introduce the bill during this legislative session. I also indicated to them that the commission had some loose ends to tie up on that, but I didn't feel that it was anything that couldn't be done by way of public testimony at such time as the bill would be to be considered for the first time. That bill will come up for hearing on April 14th, that I've been requested to appear and provide the Labor and Commerce Committee with specific information on the contents of the bill itself, at which time it'll probably be referred to a subcommittee, since that seemed to be the direction that it was heading in yesterday during the committee meeting. Some distressing news, although not calamitous. I was just advised this morning that the hard disk drive on the K-Pro 10, which was the one that our secretary used, has nothing on it, which means I'm going to have to somehow resurrect all of the commentary to the Cooperative Corporation bill and get the final materials that Professor Fessler provided to the committee and that were sent to our then Juneau office.
How in the world would that have happened?
I just got the message, Fred. I haven't had a chance to follow up on it. I had been in contact with Lynn Barnes in Legislative Affairs for the purpose of having that information. It was on the hard disk placed on floppy disks.
Right, and I know we talked about that.
Pardon?
Yeah, we had talked about that. I'm just trying to, the only way that, there's only two ways that there could be nothing on the hard disk, either a head crash or somebody has formatted the whole disk.
I suspect it's the latter, Fred. That somebody formatted the machine before it was placed in storage, and as a consequence, we don't have anything. If I have time, I'm going to play with the machine a little bit and see if I can't bring some of it back. There are certain things that you can do sometimes that will extract files that have been inadvertently erased.
Do you have an unerase program?
I have access to an unerased program, yes. At any rate, since I just found out about that this morning, I haven't had a chance to follow up on it, and I will do so. Also yesterday, I had occasion to meet with the legislative assistant to Representative Fran Ulmer. She has been requested to submit a bill, a request coming from the Juno Bar Association, to undo all of the regulations that Department of Natural Resources has promulgated recently concerning recording. She's not made a decision yet whether to personally sponsor the bill or put the bill in by request. According to her legislative aide, she doesn't seem to have any strong feelings one way or another, but is merely responding to a request by a constituent or constituent group. I'd indicated to her that I would provide her information on the Recording Act, and that I gave her background information indicating that it appeared that there was a policy question appropriate for determination by the legislature concerning what document should be recorded, whether all documents should be recorded, and no judgment call should be made by the recorder on what to accept, what not to accept. I also had occasion to meet with Margot Knuth, Assistant Attorney General, who worked with the Department of Natural Resources at one time on some of those regulations. She had some questions, and I promised to get information to her concerning it, since she's actively involved both as an Assistant Attorney General and as a member of the Juno Bar Association that has expressed some concern over this bill. At any rate, that should get the matter in front of the legislature, and at that point in time, the legislature can make its policy decisions on it. My best information and belief is that the regulations that were promulgated by DNR closely reflect the work product of the commission in its recording bill. And as such, there's an issue there, since Juno Bar has taken exception to pretty much all of the regulations. They affect what can or cannot be recorded. Lastly, I had occasion to meet with...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Fred.
If DNR borrowed a lot of material from us, is it possible that it may be appropriate to have some kind of a get-together with the Juno Bar, whoever, find out who is spearheading it? And very often, you and I know that these things end up going down to maybe, a half a dozen people or less that have a major concern, and find out what the real concerns are. Very often when somebody wants you to expunge a whole thing or repeal something, they usually have only one or two things that are really bothering them.
Well, at the last meeting, Fred, I was invited to speak to the Juno Bar Association about the Recording Act. At that time, I did so and answered questions. And whereas some of the matters were resolved, it pretty clearly came down to a policy question. It's the position of the subcommittee, and which position was adopted by resolution by the Juno Bar Association, that the district recorder's office should merely serve as a repository for anything that anybody wants to record, and that there should be no determination by DNR that a document is not suitable for recording because the notary period has expired or something else has been left off the document. It's the position of the Juno Bar that the court is the appropriate forum for determining the legitimacy of a particular instrument effective in interest in real property, and not the Department of Natural Resources. So I think there's a real issue there, Fred, that's not going to be resolved by sitting down and talking about it.
Well, I didn't think that the position we took in the recording bill involved all that many discretionary actions by the department.
Well, it's the Juno Bar's position that they want to be able to record anything, whether or not the document is legally sufficient to affect an interest in real property. And if it is insufficient for any reason, the proper forum to determine that is the court. And you'll recall the commission's position was that we were trying to specify as many documents as possible and include as many conditions as possible so that the DNR didn't have to make judgment calls on what should or should not be recorded.
And you've already stated that to the Juno Bar.
Correct, and they disagree with it.
They're saying that the effect of the regulations that are taken from our bill are not as you just described.
That's right. For example, if an attorney wants to submit a warranty deed that doesn't have an acknowledgement, DNR will refuse to record it because the statute requires an acknowledgement. The Juneau Bar's position is it should be recorded anyway, and if somebody thinks it's insufficient legally, then that should be determined by litigation. So, as I say, there's a real definable policy issue there, and I don't think we're going to be able to resolve it other than through the legislative process and have the legislature determine what's the best course of action. Also, with the exception of one matter, all of the matters concerning the for-profit corporation code have been resolved, both by Mary Hughes and by myself, in working with Terry Bannister. That one matter concerns the redraft that we did on the provision of the bill dealing with secured creditors, and somehow the language that I took down didn't get to her, or got lost in the shuffle. I don't have it among my things, and she doesn't have it, so Mary and I will sit down and try and recreate what the commission did the last time in terms of making those language changes.
Well, the tapes are available, although it might be a hassle finding them.
That's right. Well, one way or another, we'll get it accomplished.
The secured party, remember that?
Just vaguely. I have some notes.
There were a couple of other matters. Mary had one that she resolved, and I'll let her explain that. One that she resolved with Terry Bannister. I had one with Terry Bannister that concerned the March 1957 language, which the commission adopted from the existing Title 10. And she indicated that if the reviser felt that date was no longer of any legal effect, that we should delete it. I told her that there was no problem with deleting it. We'd put it in there anyway solely because it appeared in the original Title 10. And Mary, you had one matter that you...
Fred, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. It was with respect to, I think you had some comments on it too, with respect to the Unclaimed Properties Act or whatever that act was entitled that was enacted last year in the legislature. And Terry had made not a substantive change, but a change that probably stylistically was better and also conformed the corporation's code to existing law. I looked at both the provisions, and the change that she had indicated would not change our draft really at all. I mean, it didn't change substantively at all. And so I called her shortly after the meeting, after looking at both, and indicated that her change was acceptable. I think you had indicated that if I was going to do anything other than that, for me to get together with John and for us to discuss it, and that was not necessary.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir. Sure.
Can you give us an indication then of what the posture of the bill is with respect to introduction? Do I understand correctly? There's just this one clarification between you and Terry Kramer, and the bill will then be ready for introduction, and then it will be in fact introduced by the Legislative Council.
That is correct.
Is there a time schedule proposed for that?
We should be able to get that change made either today or by the next week, and after that time the bill should be ready to go in with it in about a week. What Legislative Council does on the bill is unknown at this point in time. I don't know when Legislative Council will next meet and consider the bill that we requested to be introduced.
I wonder if it would behoove us to at least to make inquiry about that from the chairman of the council, or maybe Fred has a suggestion as to getting that done so we have a bill introduced with a bill number and something to chew on.
Bill, Fred, do you have a recommendation on working with Ledge Council?
Well, not really. I think that the chair could talk to Betty Curran Camp, which would be an appropriate thing. I think that the only problem is always making sure that old council members who might forget or choose to forget or just not to consider it's important so they don't remember from year to year, or new council members might not know that voting to, and normally it is done by the council, not just by the chair, you know, except when George Holman was chair perhaps, but making sure that they all know that they are in no way putting their imprimatur of approval on the thing substantively if they introduce a bill, rules, council, parenthesis, code revision commission. It's an annual battle, it always has to be worked out, and very often, in order to help it, people, perhaps in this case like John Sund, if you could speak to him, when it gets to that point after a bill's introduced, need to, at all stages, clarify that nobody should think that the council has endorsed the bill, and that nobody's trying to lie to anybody or getting extra votes for it on the basis that the council's name is on the matter. But I think that if those precautions are taken and the council chair knows that that's our understanding and the way of proceeding, that is, that you may not have a problem. You know, it's a political process. All kinds of unpredictable monkey wrenches could come in that really arise from seemingly unrelated matters, but it would seem that as long as that's presented in the appropriate way, the council should act to introduce her bills, including this one.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that in order to have things move, that it would be desirable either for you or all of us to make contact with Representative Sun and Senator Fahrenkamp and get this process underway.
I will undertake to go ahead and coordinate the activities of LAA in our bill preparation and our legislative commission members and Senator Fahrenkamp on getting these bills introduced. Keeping in mind that we already have introduced the Cooperative Corporation Bill that will be introduced by House Labor and Commerce. Parenthetically, in speaking with Representative Ulmer's legislative assistant yesterday, I queried whether or not there would be any problem in the Code Commission submitting its bill in light of the fact that Representative Ulmer had been requested to introduce a short bill which had the effect of rescinding the DNR regulations, which are taken directly from the Code Commission's bill. And I was advised that there was no problem with our introducing our bill, since Representative Ulmer had not made a decision yet.
This is a bill on the Recording Act.
That's correct. Whether to or in what form to introduce the bill that the Juvenile Bar Association had requested. So recording should be ready to go in. Security interest is still being worked upon, and the corporation's code bill for profit will be ready for introduction, and I'll coordinate those efforts.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Fred.
Yeah, I'll need to be away from the phone for a moment. I'll tell you when I'm back on the line. Just go ahead without me. I trust all of you.
We'll wait to hear your dulcet tones, Fred.
Thank you.
Now, I'll go ahead and coordinate that so that we can get our bills in, and I see no reason why we shouldn't be able to get all of our bills introduced this session. There was a sort of an implicit consensus at Labor and Commerce yesterday that it might be wise to concentrate our efforts on the Cooperative Corporation Bill, since it seemed to be less controversial than the For-Profit Corporation Bill, at which time there would be an additional argument to be made that since the Cooperative Corporation Bill fairly closely tracked the for-profit bill, that it would then be advisable to have a for-profit code that matched the Cooperative Corporation Bill. In other words, use the co-op bill as a vehicle to work in the corporation's code bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be reluctant to follow that advice without a broader ascertaining of where we might stand. It seems to me that the For-Profit Corporations Code is a more polished, developed instrument, and that if anything's going to hang one on the other, it should perhaps be the reverse. And I'd like to see us get, if possible, the For-Profit Corporations Code moved along to the extent that, if not still this session, yet scheduled by this session, some committee process on it, including the possibility of an interim committee process on it during the summer or in the fall, so that some meaningful committee consideration has developed before the convening of the next session. I think without that, we're...
Fred, we're talking. Are you on again?
Oh, I just picked up the phone. It was dead. I thought everybody had gone.
No, we had turned off the mics for the teleconference because you had gone.
Oh, no, don't do that. I'll be in and out. I'll want to listen for a moment and so forth. So.
What we were discussing, I was discussing, is my feeling that, well, John, I don't know whether you heard it, but John had reported that he got an indication from House Labor and Commerce that maybe the Cooperative Corporations Code should proceed ahead of for-profit, and I was questioning whether that's advisable, because it seems to me the For-Profit Corporations Code is not only more significant generally and more important, but also more developed in terms of prior polishing of it.
Well, I think that about all you can do in that kind of a position is to present it to the interested legislator.
Well, my view, though, Fred, as I was saying to them, was that we should push it to the extent of our capabilities to get some meaningful committee consideration of it, either during this session or in the interim, so that prior to the convening of the second session, where we might hope for final action, something substantive is done by a committee that has a significant consideration of it. And this might also include introducing it on both sides, getting it in the House and the Senate, and getting possibly even joint committee action in the interim during the summer or the fall, so that it's been chewed on before we face the rush of the next session.
And I think that's correct, Judge. The Commission has made a determination that the first priority item is the For-Profit Corporation Bill. I'm merely passing on to the members the feelings of House Labor and Commerce. The Cooperative Corporation Bill is now a personal bill of Representative Kopanen. So he is interested. In fact, I've been advised that he introduced a bill similar to the same bill last year under his name, and it didn't go anyplace. And so he has a personal interest in the Cooperative Corporation Bill.
That was what I was referring to regarding legislative prerogative. I don't think that we should certainly complain or interfere, and I don't think that's really what Judge Stewart meant, when someone might have different priorities than the Commission does with regard to which one of our bills ought to be concentrated on. If that person is in the legislature, we've provided them with various products, and they do have a right to pick and choose. We certainly want them to know our views, and we want them to know our view of our priorities, but we certainly can't object if they have different priorities, but I think we're required to cooperate with them and provide any information they need in doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, our priority for the for-profit corporation still exists, and I think we should move that forward. I'm just advising the Commission members about my communications and
I agree. No, you and I are disagreeing, John, as we often don't, and seem as though we do. I was just pointing out the difference between our views and theirs, and that while they're not compatible, we can do both things at the same time. If some legislator wants to pick a bill that we think is either not finished or not important, he has that prerogative to do it, and I think we're required to cooperate at the same time that we are also pursuing our own views and our own priorities in the appropriate ways.
Yeah, there's also a perception on the part of the members of House Labor and Commerce that the present Commissioner of Commerce, Tony Smith, has some opposition to this bill. I indicated that I was not aware that he had any opposition to the co-op bill since it had never been considered, although he did have some opposition prior to assuming his present position on the for-profit corporation bill. And there was also, I responded to a couple of questions from Representative Furness because of his recollection of problems that the House had had with the for-profit corporation code. So I have met with Commissioner Smith and am attempting to persuade him that his department should give favorable consideration to the for-profit corporation code, but that's not been forthcoming yet.
You haven't met with Tony yet?
I have met with him,
oh,
yes.
Oh, you have?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
And we discussed the bill briefly.
I can't hear it very well, though.
Sorry, Fred.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, I did meet with Tony Smith, and we did discuss the bill generally. I don't believe he's ever reviewed the bill. He published an article in the newspaper some time ago indicating that generally if it ain't broke, you shouldn't try and fix it, without getting really into any of the specifics. So I'm in the process of providing him with information that he wants so that he can review the thing on its merits. As you all know, his present director of corporations, Willis Kirkpatrick, has previously testified in favor of the bill and is still in favor of the bill, although he has to follow the orders of his boss. So, no, that we should still try and promote the for-profit corporation code bill to the extent possible, and just let the legislative process do what it does. The next matter on the agenda is the budget and contract report. I noticed that I only have one copy here. That I also believe was sent to you, Fred, so I think I'll defer consideration of that till everybody has a chance to get to it. Our budget is still well within the safe limits in terms of unexpended funds, so we don't have a problem, a budget problem at this point in time, and it doesn't look like we will have prior to the end of the fiscal year. This time, I think I'm going to take up consideration of the Administrative Procedure Act and turn the floor over. Peter, you got a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, before we do that, I guess this sort of comes under old business and a little bit under what we just did considering the old bill for introduction. I just want to toss this out as something, I don't want to make a motion at this point, but maybe get a reading of the Commission's feeling about the recording bill. It's my thoughts, just as I sit here, that in light of Representative Ulmer's intent here, and also the continuing controversy about the substance of our bill, it may be a good idea for us to table that and not pursue introduction and sort of concentrate our efforts on these two corporate revisions, particularly the for-profit. I realize that we've already voted, so I guess, if the commission agrees with that line of thinking, we would have to reconsider our vote at our January meeting.
Well,
it appears that the issue will be on the legislative table without our introducing a bill. And I'm concerned that about two things. First, diluting our effort, and second, hurting the sort of the credibility of the commission that's been dormant for a while now. And I think we have to sort of start a rebuilding process to get our corporate revisions and then the more important, or not more important, but the forthcoming, hopefully next session, projects, Administrative Procedure Act and Occupational Licensing.
Okay, I did ask some fairly pointed questions of Representative Ulmer's legislative assistant yesterday, Peter, specifically directed toward getting some feeling as to whether or not Representative Ulmer would be offended or disturbed or what her intentions were concerning her bill. And I was assured that it was all right to go ahead and introduce our bill, and probably was a good thing since she hadn't even made a decision yet how or in what manner to introduce her bill so that we could get the matter in front of the legislature. So I don't really think there's a problem, a practical political problem with introducing the bill, and it will get before the legislature the full consideration of the Recording Act, and it will raise that particular issue. That's only one very small part of our bill, is what documents can be recorded.
Mr. Chairman, I'm inclined to agree that we should definitely proceed. I can understand Peter's concerns, but I think from what you have reported about Representative Ulmer, she's simply accommodating the Juneau Bar by having the subject matter presented and is not taking a position. And it would be best to have both bills there so that where there are differences, it can be debated. I don't think it hurts our credibility. We've gone too far with this thing in terms of securing the endorsement of the administration as it is expressed by responsible people in the Department of Natural Resources, at least. And having it considered otherwise, I think we really should proceed with the introduction of the Recording Act and face the controversy when there are committee hearings, legislative committee hearings on both pieces of legislation, if indeed she does introduce the other. You say she hasn't even decided to do that yet.
No, she has not.
And maybe if she hears something of the other side, she might determine not to do it.
And, of course, our bill will raise that issue
right
in the legislative process as to what, as a matter of public policy, should be a recordable document and who should have the responsibility for determining the legitimacy or legality of a particular document.
I think having both bills introduced is a good way of raising the issue and getting it adequately debated.
Okay. Any further comments?
I can agree with that. I just wanted to toss that out.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I indicated to Representative Alper's legislative aide that we were very sensitive to introducing anything that would tend to usurp the prerogative of a legislative member, and she said no, that would not be a problem. So I think we're okay in going ahead and introducing our bill and putting the issue squarely before the legislature.
As I understand it, John, though, that our bill is going to be very, or in some respects, is identical to DNR's bill. Is that correct?
Well, DNR
regulations.
Oh,
yeah, DNR's
regs.
Regulations.
Oh, okay.
Our bill is probably a 50 or a 60 page bill. The bill that Representative Ulmer has had prepared for her in draft form is a 2-page bill, which basically rescinds or abrogates the regulations that are already in effect promulgated by the Department of Natural Resources. So her bill doesn't address the majority of what we address in our bill. It just addresses that one aspect, which is what documents can be recorded and who decides whether or not they should be recorded. Anything further on any of the matters that we've discussed so far? Moving right along, Mary, why don't you take us through the Administrative Procedure Act?
Let me just raise a question about that. We have this tentative agenda before us, and I assume that consideration of the Administrative Procedure Act would consume all of today and maybe all of tomorrow. Is that right?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I plan to do, there were three things the subcommittee was instructed to do by the commission at the February meeting. All three we have recommendations for the commission, and I'm following Terry Kramer's letter, going through it and discussing, being able to discuss that with the commission. I think we would spend probably 3 hours, Judge. There's some issues that are of some import, but a lot of it is stylistic and relevant law or current law changes.
Well, maybe my recollection is not correct. I thought we had a stack of comments from other agencies.
We weren't going to go through those today. We were going to come back with a schedule. I think with respect to those, I think it would be my recommendation that we do, as the commission discussed last time, is send the agencies the draft after we've gotten through with it, with their old comments, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel.
I think that answers my question.
Okay. There were three things that the subcommittee was supposed to bring before the commission at this meeting. One of them was a review of the February 11 Terry Kramer memo. The second was a recommendation with the scheduled distribution of the new tentative draft of the APA to the administrative agencies. And a third, and probably perhaps most important, was whether rulemaking should be excised from the tentative draft. Just for a reminder for the commissioners, the first 14 pages, except for the line 29 of the 14th page, is rulemaking. And the rest of the draft covers adjudication and judicial review. It probably would make more sense to talk about the rulemaking first, but unless someone disagrees, I would like to go through Terry's memo first in order to kind of, there's not enough big problems within the rulemaking session not to clean it up. And then we can have our philosophical discussion about whether rulemaking should be included. Because I'd just like to, we can address all of Terry's concerns, and I'd like to be able to address those so we could get back to her on that, if that's all right with the commissioner.
Go ahead and do it that way, Mary.
Okay. First of all, I did not have the November 2, 1984 memo from Tam Cook, and I don't know why I didn't have it, but I talked to Terry about that, and she said that all of Tam Cook's recommendations or concerns were addressed in her letter. So the fact that was not available to me is I've got no import. The first major issue in Terry Kramer's memo was the use in the draft of agency member and member of the agency. And if the commission has the tentative draft in front of it, a good example that we can see of that is in 681B, and if you'll turn to that, I'll just show you an example of what bothered Terry.
What is this reference?
It's on page 37.
On page 37. In that particular section, on 38, on line 1, we use a member of the agency, whereas going down to line 19 of the same page, we use agency member. Agency member is defined in 981, and member of the agency isn't. And Terry points out, she questions whether there's a difference. There is no difference. And so what the any reference in the draft to member of the agency should just be changed to agency member.
Mary and Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Fred.
Yes, I will be off for a while, but please leave all your mics on and leave the circuit on. Otherwise, when I listen in from time to time, it sounds like it's a dead line.
We'll wait you breathlessly, Fred.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So her question was our use of member of the agency and agency member intended to include lesser employees of the agency in addition to the head of the agency, or just to be exclusively those people at the head. It's my opinion that we meant agency member as defined in 981, and the correction should be made that using the words agency member instead of member of the agency throughout the draft. I mean, that's exactly what we meant, so.
Okay. Any discussion on that?
If it's required, Mr. Chairman, I would move that correction be made in accordance with Terry Kramer's letter of February 11th.
Is there any discussion on the motion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We'll go ahead and make that change then, Mary.
Okay, and I will, I guess, will you be getting back to, or should I talk to Terry?
If you would, why don't you keep the notes on this and get back to Terry Bannister and indicate what we want to do in response to her memorandum.
Right, okay.
I'm sorry, Terry Kramer.
The next part of Terry's concerns was the draft's use of agency and agency head. And agency head is defined in, I believe, 981, and agency is defined in 991. And again, it was a mistake in drafting. Where we see the, I'm trying to think, if you turn to page 39, line 6, and this is talking about, to give the commissioners an example, this is talking about the form of an administrative decision. Findings of fact must be based exclusively on the evidence of record and on matters officially noticed. The experience, technical competence, and specialized knowledge of the agency head may be utilized in the evaluation of the evidence. Agency is appropriate at that point, and I don't know of any reason other than overlooking an oversight that agency head was used. So Terry's question was, must all adjudicatory proceedings be cited by the agency head, or may they be decided by a lesser agency body? As agency is described within the law, within the draft, anyone that has the authority may decide. So agency is the correct term to be used, and agency head, the head in on page 39, line 8, should be deleted, and any other appropriate or inappropriate agency references. Her comment there on the top of page 2 of her letter, saying that if final decisions must be reached by the agency head, use of the word agency is inappropriate in most places in this draft. And that's, I mean, it would be true. She's exactly right, and we want to keep it to the agency. The agency is the one that has the authority.
I assume, without having gone through the draft, that there may be occasions when the statement of agency head is indeed appropriate.
Yes, and
but it's not appropriate to suggest that all final decisions must be reached by the head.
Correct. And it's most appropriate to use agency head, in my review of the draft, in the rulemaking arena. In adjudicatory proceedings, as you've indicated, Judge, the agency makes the decision. Whoever it, the agency head allows to make that decision makes it. So that would be the recommendation is to just, particularly she's talking about in the adjudicatory situation.
And I think we'd already also discussed the fact that there wasn't always a person designated as an agency head, which would create an additional problem. So.
Agency head is defined, but then agency is defined to include agency head, of course, you know.
In response to her, do we need to go through the draft phrase by phrase where these terms appear and tell her which it should be, or can we give her simply the overall policy statement that agency rather than agency head is the proper term to use in the adjudicatory section?
I think we can, and I think from my review, and it's easy to miss things, but from my review, this is the only place that we screwed up. So I think that's what she's talking about in her comments, the adjudicatory section, the review of the decision and that sort of thing, and the reconsideration and that sort of thing. And most of the time, with the exception of this one place, agency is used. So I think that's appropriate.
Okay. I move that Mary be authorized to tell Craig Kramer this policy result.
Any discussion? Any objection? That will be the order of the day.
Okay. Terry's next comments deal with specific sections, and one of the sections she mentions, the second full paragraph on page 2 of her letter, is section 741. My notes from a commission meeting back in September of 1984 indicate that that particular section was removed, and she says the draft currently contains not that particular section, so I just said fine. I mean, it was removed, and it was removed by the commission on that date, so I didn't make any further comments on that. She also indicates that one of the sections became 8195, and that's fine. I guess it's more appropriate there. And then she said that after it's been reviewed and changed, she'll change the numbers. All her comments with respect to that, I checked everything out, and I found satisfactory. The one area, 421, was on the power to administer oaths, and that's covered in another section, the hearing officer or the commission agency's power to administer oaths. So I think she's just telling us that for informational purposes. And I had an opportunity to talk to Terry this morning, and she confirmed that so many of the things that she brought to our attention were those types of things. So it really doesn't make any change in the draft.
So we don't need to take any action on that?
No. And I bring it to your attention only because she did. With respect to the style-only changes, I reviewed each one of those, and those are 011. This is in rulemaking. 011, 021, and 051, and I find no substantive changes at all. They were only stylized. So no
the commission
action.
Needs to take no action on that.
Zero.
Well, I think maybe for her sake, we ought to tell her that we approve the changes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. They're as she. Okay.
Right.
That's what we'll do.
Okay. You're satisfied though, Mary, that. Struck her on that particular paragraph of her letter.
Okay.
I move that we confirm and approve the changes that she has made for style purposes.
Okay. Any discussion? Any objection?
I am back and I do approve.
So ordered.
With respect to 061, that's the top of page 5, subparagraph C, Terry amended, she added subsection C in the form and contents of proposed notice to reflect the current law relative to the publication of the Alaska Administrative Law Journal, and she did that in several places, and it's certainly appropriate because it does conform the draft to the current law.
does that, that doesn't, I take it, affect any substantive change in our bill?
No.
Okay.
Move we adopt the change.
Any discussion? So adopted.
Going on the same page, page 5, to the administrative journal itself, in subparagraph A, she included in A4 statutory cite to 3630.
Is that the new procurement code?
Mm-hmm. And that is appropriate, certainly.
What is 3630, Mary?
It is the procurement code, and that's and I believe also under the administrative journal, I mean, things like that need to be included in the administrative journal. So it would, you know, tie everything together.
Okay.
Well, I would move that we approve the changes that she has made with respect to 4462071A.
A4. Just A4, Judge.
Well, it's and she added 8 as well.
Right, and I have a problem with 8.
Oh, okay. So A4 then.
Okay, right now A4.
Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted.
Okay. With respect to 8, she included a citation to 4462.11, and we need to look at that because 4462.111C, which she refers to, says, within 180 days after publication of the notice of proposed action or the end of public proceedings on the action, whichever comes later, an agency shall either adopt the regulation or terminate the proceeding by publishing notice of termination in the Alaska Administrative Journal. She indicates in 8 that it's a notice of termination of a proposed regulation. I don't think you can terminate a proposed regulation. C talks about notice of termination of proceeding relative to a proposed regulation.
Well, could it be amended to say notice of termination of a proceeding concerning?
That's fine. I had a proceeding relative to, but that's right, of a proceeding concerning
a proposed.
And that would be what I would recommend.
Do we have a motion?
So moved. After, on page 5, line 23, subparagraph 8, after the second of, insert the phrase proceeding concerning.
I think it's, yes. Right.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So adopt it.
Okay, now next we have paragraphs 10 and 11 of that same 071 administrative journal, and that just brings us current to current law. You have to list the vacancies of boards and commissions and advisories opinions of the Attorney General. So I have no problems with those at all.
Move it up.
Any discussion? Any objection? So adopt it.
The same comments are applicable to subsection C on the top of page 6. The Lieutenant Governor shall provide to the Legislative Affairs Agency the text of each issue of the journal in a computer-readable magnetic medium compatible with the legislative data processing system. I can't even read it. The Legislative Affairs Agency shall retain the text of each issue of the journal in a computer-readable magnetic medium.
And don't erase the hard disk.
And don't erase the disk. That's right. Anyway, that is, of course, adopting law as it's been amended since the draft. So that would be acceptable, too.
So moved.
Okay.
Is there any discussion on that? Any objection? So adopted.
Okay. Nice high-tech amendment.
I'm amazed I can read it. I'm still back in the 50s. Okay, in subsection D, Terry says the commission needs to decide when publication in the journal is effective. And I don't know...
What are the alternatives?
Yeah, I mean, the alternatives, It's a biweekly publication, and I was waiting, I was wanting to hear Peter's comments with respect to that from the agency's perspective, but, you know...
Yeah, I don't really have any comments right now because I'm not sure what the alternatives are either. I was just looking to see if there's an existing provision about when the currently required publications are effective. If there is, then I suppose it makes sense probably to use that as a starting.
It would allow a few moments for him to take a look to see.
Yeah, if you would, I.
Current law.
Why don't we go ahead and go off the tape record for just a minute, Peter?
Right.
And we're still on teleconference. Back on the record now.
Just looking at the existing statute on the Administrative Journal, which is 4462.175, there isn't a provision that specifically provides for when publication is effective, but there is a definition of publish. And it says that publish means to make available to the public, A, through the legislative data processing system, and B, in printed form. And I believe, I'm not sure how it has occurred, but I was just told this morning regarding something else that the printed form is not being provided. So I'm not sure about that. But it seems that if we need an effective date of publication, and I'm not sure if we need that, it may be that it's referred to someplace else, but it would probably make sense to say the date that it's made available to the public in one or both of these forms.
Well, Peter,
one of them would do, excuse me.
Well, we could, in the bottom of page 6, Terry has amended our draft to include the published definition.
Okay.
And when I read through it, I thought, well, we could just say, we could just not say anything. We could just say... Yeah, we may not want to have an effective date. That, I guess that's your comments,
right,
too. But I didn't think reading what publish meant helped if some lawyer wanted to look at this and try to determine the effective date. I mean, that it doesn't help very much.
I feel ignorant about the process of how this administrative journal is handled. You say it's in fact it is not put into printed form?
I was told that this morning, that
by whom?
Because of funding problems or something, that it's only available in the legislative computer system. It can be accessed.
Well, I would ask this question then. When it's first entered in the legislative computer system, is there some reference to the date that's done?
So that by
reviewing the legislative computer system, there would be an indication that on March 20, 1987, notice was published, notice was entered in the legislative data processing system.
I believe that there's an entry date.
If there is an entry date, it seems to me that would be a firm date to which reference can be made, but I feel ignorant, inadequately informed as to whether that's an accessible, meaningful bit of information. And I think we ought to go back to Terry or somebody dealing with the publication of the the process of making available to the public through the legislative data processing system to ascertain if there is a knowable date that could be used as a reference.
Yeah, it seems to me we don't want to tie it in with publication in printed form, because if in fact that's not being done now,
sure,
there will never be an effective date.
That's right.
Well, we don't tie it in because of the definition of published. Right.
Well, the definition of published does talk in terms of hard copy made available.
Well, that's true. It's an and.
But it says and.
It says and.
Yeah. So we are tied into the definition of publish, and it might result in...
Except that we're not if in D we say an item is considered published in the journal on the date when it is entered into the legislative data processing system.
All right. Are we going to have due process problems with that because it's not available to the public?
It doesn't really...
The argument is that it is available to the public because of all the LIOs spread throughout the state. Of course, the number is decreasing all the time, but they all have the terminals that have access, plus people have, I believe, access from some, private offices.
But it seems to me we need information from whoever manages this process as to what is a usable and realistic, ascertainable date.
I agree, and I think it should take into consideration the fact that the information is in reality available rather than theoretically available,
right.
If
correct.
That's possible. So,
who do we ask?
I can find out from the Lieutenant Governor's office, and there's a couple people there that are responsible for this, and I'll either talk to them during the lunch break or possibly, if I'm not sure that I understand all the details, I may get somebody to come back over with me this afternoon.
Okay, why don't we do that if we can, so we can finish the matter this afternoon. Otherwise, why don't we ask Terry if she'll try and recommend to us a good procedure for, one, determining an effective date, and two, meeting any due process problems that might arise for having an effective date, because it seems to me a matter of great moment to, we don't want to, not knowing what the process is, and we need to really know what we're doing.
From the bar committee standpoint, accepting, if the commission accepts the meaning, the definition of the word published, and if it's not being put in printed form, the bar committee is going to say, well, what's the good of talking about, just exactly your comments, what's the good of talking about publication and defining it in a manner that you know isn't being utilized? Well, because of whatever constraints. And there's arguments on both sides, but I can just see the private practitioners going, hey, there's no due process in this at all.
Remember, though, that the way this draft has been put together, you also have to print your have your notice published in a newspaper. What we're talking about here is this journal that's put out by the Lieutenant Governor, and if it's never actually published, there still are other places where this
publication
where it is published.
And maybe we want to tie into one of those events.
Well, we do
events.
Already. It's just the question of how do you deal with the existence or non-existence of this Lieutenant Governor journal, and what kind of attack does that leave available to somebody who wants to claim that the regulations have not been duly adopted?
Well, why don't we see if Peter can provide us with information that will allow us to resolve this afternoon. Otherwise, we'll have to prevail upon Terry Kramer to make a recommendation as to how we accomplish that.
Okay, I'll do that. I want to ask one question that is just regarding the purpose of an effective date statement here. If we have a requirement for publication, then what do we accomplish by saying publication is effective on X date?
Well, I guess if there's a requirement that it be published in the journal, then as a matter of due process, it doesn't become effective unless and until it is published in the journal. And if it may never be published in the journal for budgetary reasons, then we need to have some other time so that we can point to it and say, okay, this is the time at which the regulation took effect. Otherwise, the regulation is never in effect. So will you sort of highlight that, Mary, so that you can bring us back to that?
Okay, with respect to the last two concerns of Terry's, they are subparagraphs G and H on page 6, and both of those talk about the journal, and it is bringing the draft up to current law. And that's where Peter's definition of published. Mm-hmm. When I got this far and saw the definition of published, I'm still a little bit questioning, as you are, with respect to this effective date. But I'd like to get more information right. about it, and we can discuss it more. Well, but when I got to published, I thought, well, at least we're adopting the definition as is already adopted.
Do we need to defer consideration of subparagraphs G and H until we resolve the effective date issue?
Particularly H has...
Yeah, I think H, the definition of published, H2. Is tied into this effective date. The kicker here, or the critical provision, seems to be E, which says that a person may not maintain an action based on publication or lack of publication
in the journal,
which so. Renders this all... I guess that's why or how budget considerations could
allow them
stop
to drop
the printing printed publication. But, anyway, I guess we should just table these two, H2 and D here, until I can find out more from the Lieutenant Governor's office.
All right, so we'll go ahead and defer consideration of that till we get some more information.
G is acceptable. That's
why don't we consider it all in one motion?
Okay.
We've already done A, though.
We've
already done partial.
D and H2 are the only ones that tie together here. G talks about the Commissioner of Administration being responsible to separately account for the money deposited and collected by publication of this.
I move we approve.
Any discussion? Any objection? So approved.
Okay. 4462111 on page 9. Terry changed subsection B starting on line 9 to comply with the current law. And you have in front of you what she changed it to. The previous draft said the agency shall consider all relevant matter presented to it before adopting a regulation. Terry has included the first part of the, she has included the same language in the second part of her sentence after and she has added, the agency may accept material presented in any form of communication authorized by this chapter. A lot of her changes go to telecommunications and teleconferencing, and it doesn't change the import. I was concerned that it changed what the agency should consider, but it certainly doesn't. It's a form. It's the form in which they can consider, and so I would accept that.
Any discussion? Any objection? So approved.
Okay. Next we go to 581, which is back in adjudication, page 29, and Terry has with respect to 581, which is on line 22, she has changed subsections A and B to reflect current law, and these are, again, teleconferencing changes. You'll note, because it becomes important in another section, that within 581A, each participant has to agree to the pre-hearing conference conducted by teleconferencing. Which, I mean, as a private practitioner, I think that's very good. Later on in the draft, she has some language which kind of indicates that agreement doesn't have to take place, and so there will be an issue to decide here. But I like the language here, and I like it in B. It is only done if all participants agree. So,
we adopt.
Any discussion? Any objection? So approved.
Okay, on page 30, 601C, at the very bottom of the page, Going on to page 31, the parties may, by agreement, select another place for hearing. If the parties agree, the agency may use teleconferencing. The same comments apply.
Move it up.
Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted.
Okay. And 621, which begins on page, well, is on page 32. Again, if each participant agrees, the presiding officer may conduct all or part of the hearing by teleconferencing. And in subsection C of the same, starting on line 17, if the hearing is conducted by teleconferencing, the requirement for public observation is met by permitting members of the public to hear and see the proceeding while it's taking place to the same extent the presiding officer can hear and see it. So, fine.
Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I have a point to back up a little bit. This is out of sequence, and I was thinking that it would come up again from Mary, something Mary said. The first one of these, the pre-hearing conference, 581A.
Which page is that?
29. My thought is that you know, mainly what we're talking about here with hearings, people having to agree mutually that hearings, teleconference hearings, or that hearings be conducted by teleconference, we're talking about due process, right to confront witnesses, and so on. That seems not to apply to a pre-hearing conference, which is a matter of where scheduling and things like that, usually parties, if they're represented, are not even present. Rather, it's just conducted by attorneys. And typically now the practice is to conduct these by telephone, because almost invariably they involve people that are not, you know, you have a minimum of three people, the two parties and the hearing officer. It's very rare that they will all three be in the same location, the same municipality or community. And so I think that it makes sense to delete the requirement of mutual agreement for pre-hearing conferences, because we're not talking about witnesses or testimony being taken. So I guess if we can move back to that. Does that come up again, Mary?
No, it doesn't. No. What comes up is a real broad teleconferencing statement that doesn't say anything about agreement of the participants, and that's what bothers me. I don't have a particular problem on pre-hearing conferences, because that's the way we... You're right, the confrontation of witnesses is the big thing. So if you want to, I like it that all parties have to agree, but on the other hand, that could cause some problems too.
Okay, is there any problem with a pre-hearing conference that does not include one of the parties? I'm not saying that that's necessarily bad, but that at a pre-hearing conference, you after all are going to set schedules and set forth certain guidelines for the administrative hearing. Do we need to worry about that?
I don't think it would be unfair for me to do so, and I haven't heard the entire discussion, but I would hope that it kind of is a kind of a proxy from me, since my involvement is necessarily intermittent, that the commission would fully discuss that issue before you take a position.
When you look at this possible scope of the pre-hearing conference as it's set out in B, there could be occasions when there's a legitimate objection to having it conducted by teleconference by one party or another, a legitimate objection by one party or another. I think we ought to leave it there. Because I think, in practical fact, that ordinarily nobody's going to object. But when, for example, a part of the pre-hearing conference is protective orders or objections to offers of evidence, it may be quite meaningful to have a live face-to-face conference.
I wouldn't want to be the other counsel arguing to a hearing officer over
that's
the phone.
Right, that's yeah. Right.
No, that's sort of what I was thinking about, that they're fairly think, important matters are resolved.
You know what happens on these? Very frequently you have one counsel there with the hearing officer, if the people are at the on the telephone somewhere and they really want to sit down with the hearing officer face to face, they ought to be able to say, no, we just
you know, you can, hey, Jack, baloney.
That's right. No, I think there's probably some fairly substantial rights that are at risk during a pre-hearing conference, given the scope of pre-hearing conference orders.
As it's defined in B.
As it's defined. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really wasn't aware of the breadth of what's included in a pre-hearing conference. That's more like what I would think of as an omnibus.
A scheduling conference, sort of hearing. Mm-hmm. Solely or something, but... I think we ought to leave it the way it is.
Yeah, I guess I agree with that in light of what's all that's in B.
Okay, well, that didn't require a motion since we've already approved that anyway.
Where are we on 62-721?
Are we on 720? Yes, we are. And that is, again, a vote by teleconferencing shall be recorded in a manner that identifies each person who has voted and how the person voted. So it's, again, a teleconferencing change. There's no problem.
And that was made to existing statute 2 years ago.
Yes. I don't know how. Yeah.
Move we approve.
Any discussion? Any objection? So approved.
Okay, the next one is the one in which I made reference to, 901, which is at the top of page 43. And Terry has included this section to reflect current law. The first part of this says, an agency may use teleconferencing for the benefit or convenience of the parties, the public or the agency, in connection with a proceeding or act authorized under this chapter, excuse me, if all statutory and constitutional rights of the parties are waived or adequately protected, which really bothers me because I'm not sure why this is included exactly the way it is, but I would really object to this as a person who has to deal in this realm because I would suggest, and I'd like to hear naturally the commission's comments, you know, it's fine to say that an agency may use teleconferencing for the benefit of the party, so in a connection with a proceeding or act authorized under this chapter, period, because it's a may, and they may use it, and then they have to go back, and each time they have to look at what's required. But when you say that a hearing officer, and I can imagine some hearing officers may think rights are adequately protected, but the parties haven't thought they were.
Mm-hmm. But Mary, do you really mean a period after the chapter?
Chapter.
You let me say something. Don't you mean? Don't you want to add the phrase, "if agreed to by all the parties"?
We could. I mean, that would really.
Yeah, I don't think you want to because, and I guess for background, I should say that I drafted this language when teleconferencing amendments were made to the Administrative Procedure Act a couple of years ago. The idea was to, I can't remember if there was a provision, I don't think there was an existing corresponding provision, but the idea was to make a broad policy statement that would apply to the entire APA. And if we required agreement of all, this applies to everything under this chapter, which includes the rulemaking hearings as well. And so certainly agreement of parties would not be required it wouldn't be appropriate to require that there. The intent of the last part, the if clause, was to cover all of the case, for example, if there's a statutory right to agreement or
to a hearing
requirement of agreement, that would be covered by the if clause. Now, I'll be the first to admit that it's not a particularly artfully drafted clause, but the intent was to try to cover everything in as few words as possible. It's a circular situation, really, where basically it says that teleconferencing is okay as long as there's nothing that says it's not.
Does that language reflect current law, Peter?
She says 901 is set out in existing in the APA somewhere, but I don't think that means that we shouldn't try to improve on it.
Yeah, I too have some real problems with talking about safeguarding of constitutional or statutory rights. I mean, it doesn't indicate how or who has safeguarded those, and there may be significant differences of opinion as to whether or not they've been safeguarded.
Right.
and I would think that we would want to delete reference to protecting those rights and merely reference that which is required by the act itself.
But then, if you just put a period after chapter, and even if you use may, doesn't that give the agency too much power?
No, because I think they have to go back and look at the specific what they're doing. Like on rulemaking, under the particular provisions of rulemaking, it may be all right to teleconference without party.
Wouldn't you have to put the phrase with the proceeding, in connection with the proceeding, or act as otherwise authorized under this chapter?
That may be a good... I see your concern, yeah. And that might be a good addition. To refer back
so that in a particular type of proceeding it has indeed been authorized.
Okay. That would make it clear that
that it is subject to the other provisions.
Yeah, something
of
like
this
that
chapter.
Right.
Yeah,
and agency may.
Okay. Do we have a consensus?
Say it, but that's the idea.
Yeah.
Do we have
right.
agreement that we're not going to require permission of the parties, all the parties, or acquiescence of all the parties in conducting the hearing?
Sorry, it's me. As long as when they use it, it's otherwise authorized under this chapter.
Do we have a motion then to amend the language of?
I'd like to see the proposed language and maybe check it with Terry or have Peter check it through further, because she says in her memo, added this section to reflect current law. Mm-hmm. Where is the current law?
The current law, this section 901 in the draft is verbatim identical to section 635 of the existing APA.
That's not necessarily a glorious thing to say about a provision.
No, it's not. I agree. I mean, I don't think that even the fact that this is relatively new compared to the rest of the APA should inhibit us from trying
from making changes. Yeah. Well, is that a good change to say in connection with the proceeding, or act, and as otherwise authorized under this chapter? Period.
It may be. I mean, one of the things we're dealing with is whether we want to require. Only permit teleconferencing where it's specifically permitted elsewhere in the Act, or whether we want to permit it for all administrative proceedings except where due process or statutory or constitutional rights require otherwise. Now, one of the things that I thought about when I came up with this open language that I recognize that why it bothers people is that. The due process requirements are not very well established regarding how or to what extent the right to confront witnesses is satisfied by various means of teleconferencing. There's still developing technology for video teleconferencing, which may well satisfy many due process considerations short of criminal proceedings. Recognizing that these are not criminal, but they do involve rights to which due process attaches.
It's more than just. Go ahead.
The fact that there's a lot of technology developing quickly, a lot of law that's still really in flux. That was why we felt that 2 years ago that it was appropriate to have some kind of open-ended, broad. Sort of policy statement here as a general provision.
Well, ideally, can people hear me?
Right.
Ideally, we should do our best to allow as much flexibility in using the teleconferencing system because of the lower costs that are available to people that could be involved in the administrative process while doing whatever is necessary to safeguard due process rights. There are kind of two sides to the coin. One of the sides might be that it could either happen or be claimed to happen that if teleconferencing were not available because of the problems that somebody might raise, that an agent agency or a large entity that can afford to fly to Anchorage or Juneau, a private entity, for instance, could use these claimed due process safeguards as a way of really denying actual due process by requiring physical presence of people who can't afford to go there. So there's, it kind of cuts both ways.
Is there concern on the part of any of the commissioners that the procedure that we now have in the draft bill, to wit, allowing objection to teleconferencing, is going to create some problems? Seems to me that we don't, that there may not be an issue there, insofar as we're saying we have a procedure available, subject to objection by one or more of the parties.
Mr. Chairman,
if no one objects, then the procedure can go forward. Yes, Fred.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Fred.
Yes, I am very concerned about this provision and interested in it. I am currently crippled in that I've been listening to the commission on and off while trying to work on a settlement estimate. The materials, including the language you're looking at, is on the top bunk of some bunk beds in my basement where the speakerphone is, where I should be and I'm not. Is it at all possible that you could skip this item and try to get to it at a later time when I hope to be in that situation and I can look at the language?
Fred, I'd prefer not to do that unless there's a consensus that we need to give this further deliberation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we do have to...
Right now we're getting a little laboratory of what the problems are that arise in teleconferenced administrative hearings, for instance.
Mr. Chairman, if I remember correctly, Peter's going to get some information to bring back to us after lunch about another item here, so we do have to take it up once again. I don't think there would be any objection to taking it up at 1:30 if Fred's will be in his proper location then. And I think it's important enough.
What is the information you have from the agency? I was told at a call late yesterday afternoon that the circuit might be available only until 2 or 2:30 because of possible use by other people. Were you told anything differently or updated information, Mr. Chairman?
Negative.
Were you told anything at all?
Negative.
Okay. I may get off this line and call Lynn. I'll get off this line and call Lynn Barnes in.
Okay, strike that, Fred. I have a memo here from our message from Lynn Barnes indicating that for today we have teleconferencing from 9 to 2:30.
I see.
So we will be off teleconferencing by 2:30.
When will you be reconvening after lunch then?
We can, if we want, we can adjourn early for lunch and then meet at 1 o'clock. It'll give us 2.5 hours.
Okay. I'll have to plan around that then, and if this issue could be maybe brought up about like 1:30 or 1:45, I'll do my damnedest to make sure I'm on the circuit.
Fred, I'm not going to do that. We have too much to cover this afternoon, and we'll have to wait from 1 to 1:45 to get back to this issue, and we're almost finished with the APA anyway. I'd like to move right along. Is there no way that you can be available at 1?
Well, can we, Mr. Chairman, could we... skip this particular issue and go to the others, and that'll take us up to about 12, and then take this up at 1:30, this particular issue.
That'll give us one hour.
An hour on this issue, and in the meantime, Peter would have the information that he was going to get about the other item. I think we should be able to handle it then.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take it up at 1:30, Fred.
Okay, I'll do my damnedest to make sure I'm in the basement. I have the language in front of me and on circuit before 1:30 then.
Do we have his phone number?
Yes.
Oh, we have it.
Okay. We'll be beginning promptly at 1:30, Fred, so make your best effort if you want to have some input.
What are we doing?
Are you going to begin at 1:30? I got the idea you might do other business starting at 1 and get to this at 1:30.
Begin at 1:30?
Yeah, we're going to begin at 1:30, Fred.
Oh, I see. Okay. I appreciate the accommodation.
Mr. Chairman, in the next one, 921, it says?
Yeah, but
I don't
incorrect.
See a 921.
It's 991, Judge.
991.
I think it's 991 because paragraph 3 on page 44 indicates definition within this chapter of teleconferencing.
Oh.
And I see no problem with it. It's reflective of the current law. So it would be 991.
Instead of 921.
Three.
Move we adopt.
Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted.
Section 13, we're really getting into the effects that the proposed draft has on other law. Terry, in Section 13, this was renumbered in 85. All she did was say that it was renumbered from 24370108 to the present number.
Which is 1643960H.
Correct.
So it's just a matter of
yes,
correcting the number?
Correct.
Move we adopt.
Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted.
Okay. The next item is the draft no longer contains an amendment to 2810-105I. I talked to Terry this morning, and that particular provision was repealed, and therefore no amendment is necessary. And that's why the draft no longer contains it.
Doesn't require any action, does it?
Now, in terms of the repealer section, do we have to worry about anything else that we may want to repeal? You feel comfortable that Terry has covered all of those things that have been renumbered or changed or enacted?
Well, John, I certainly didn't go through everything.
No, I'm not suggesting you should have. I'm just asking, don't feel comfortable, I won't feel comfortable, and maybe we'll want to ask Terry to double-check.
Okay, why don't we do that? Why don't I? Especially, the commission will note that sections 5, 8, 10, 19, 20, 25, 26 are added to this draft, and she did add these particular sections, and what they do are amend other sections that are affected by the new draft and changing some statutory citations. So I'll make sure when I talk to her that she feels comfortable. Okay. I guess my comfort level is that if she feels comfortable, then I have to feel comfortable.
Well, if she's done that,
well,
then.
I don't feel comfortable because I, if I could get a page reference to sections 5, 8, 10, 19, 20, 25, and 26.
We'll go through those. We'll, section 5 is at, I wish I had
it. Oh, I see page 45.
Okay.
Is that right?
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, at 45, section 5, and as you can see, the amendment amends statutory reference.
The language was already there of B,
correct,
but it's just adding the reference to AS 446271, and others are similar.
Correct.
Changes.
And yes, and you'll see on page 46, for example, section
8
is the same. She's done in legislative drafting form. Yes, it's on page 47. Exactly the same, the brackets and the underlining.
I have no problem with that.
And that's the case with all the sections.
Okay, does that require a vote?
I mean, it's acceptable, I assume, to the commissioners.
Move we approve.
Any discussion? Any objection? So adopted.
Okay. That completes Terry's letter with the exception of the three, two administrative law journal items and the definition relative to teleconferencing that we'll take up at 1:30. The other thing that the subcommittee was assigned, and I might say that the subcommittee never got to meet, but that we were assigned to think about, and I went back and looked at various things for the Administrative Law Committee in thinking about these things, but I don't want to say that they are necessarily Andy Hoagie's current thoughts. They may be his previous thoughts in 1984, so I don't want to misquote Andy, but one of the things with respect to, I think, one of the lesser concerns is the schedule of distribution to the administrative agencies. It seems to me that if we got the comments back to Terry and we had a 10